Welcome to Local Talk here on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm your host for today, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for listening in. When it comes to weather, there's not much to report. No rain is predicted for this week, unfortunately. We should see sunny days and clear nights with temperatures quite mild for August. Days will be in the 80s and nights in the 60s and 50s. I actually wore a jacket this morning to work. Things should warm up slightly into the upper 80s towards the end of the week, but nothing above the 90-degree mark is being predicted. Before we go to Dennis Hart and the news summary of Iowa, just one brief comment about the wild ones. Let me just say there is nothing more charming than having a hummingbird fly up in front of your face and investigate you from a few inches away. Okay, here's Dennis Hart with the news summary of Iowa.
The coronavirus making a comeback in Iowa. Governor Reynolds asked the U.S. Supreme Court to overturn Roe v. Wade. Air quality reaches unhealthy levels in several Iowa cities. And Oklahoma and Texas taking their first steps to leave the Big 12 football conference and leaving questions about Iowa State University's football future. All of this made big news around the state last week. First, the coronavirus. Iowa's daily coronavirus cases have spiked as the more contagious Delta variant of the virus continues to dominate. The state was averaging 308 cases a day last week, up from 63 cases a day just 3 weeks ago. Less than half the state's population has been fully vaccinated against the virus. This, as word came that Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds was disputing new federal guidance that vaccinated people should resume wearing masks indoors in public when in areas with high coronavirus spread. That designation now applies to about half of Iowa's 99 counties. The agency also recommended that everyone inside schools should wear a mask. The governor said the federal advice is counterproductive to vaccination efforts and, in her words, not grounded in reality or common sense. She also said she had not seen any data that would support issuing a mask mandate. And she said she has no plans to use federal money to entice people to stop the spread of the virus in Iowa. And the governor said that immigration at the southern border is part of the problem as coronavirus cases rise again around the nation and in Iowa. In her words, we've got people coming across the border that haven't been vaccinated, and so that's something we need to continue to look at. She also said that nearly 30 Iowa State Patrol officers who had been deployed to the U.S.-Mexican border for 2 weeks had returned home. Reynolds said while they were at the border, those troopers conducted patrols, helped process immigrants, seized drugs, and disrupted human trafficking operations. She said she sent the troopers because, in her words, the federal government has abdicated its responsibility. The cost of sending those state troopers to the border was an estimated $300,000. Also this past Saturday, hundreds of friends and family gathered at the Des Moines Airport to welcome home about 100 soldiers of the 1st Battalion, 194th Field Artillery of the Iowa Army National Guard. The Fort Dodge-based unit had deployed to Afghanistan last August. Also last week, the governor announced 7 new appointments to the State Board of Health, which will allow the advisory board to meet again and advise on public health matters. The 11-member board is designed to provide a forum for developing public health policy. The board had been unable to meet because it could not muster a quorum. Now for air quality in the state. Heavy smoke arrived in Iowa Thursday afternoon from the West Coast. The State Department of Natural Resources issued an air quality alert warning sensitive groups, including those with respiratory or heart disease, the elderly, and children, to limit outdoor exertion. On Friday morning, multiple Iowa towns had unhealthy air. Now for Governor Reynolds and abortion. The governor joined 11 other governors last week in calling for the U.S. Supreme Court to overturn landmark abortion rights decisions, such as Roe v. Wade, and let states make their own laws about the procedure. Those previous Supreme Court decisions established a constitutional right to abortion. The governor is an opponent of abortion, and she signed several laws seeking to limit the procedure in Iowa. And last week, state lawyers representing Governor Reynolds argued that the state's open meetings law is not a well-recognized public policy, and thus does not give job protections to employees who fulfill public information requests. State lawyers made that assertion in asking a judge to dismiss a wrongful termination suit filed by Polly Carver Kim, the former longtime communications director for the Department of Public Health. Now for the case of Christian Bahena Rivera, the man convicted of killing University of Iowa student Molly Tibbetts. His lawyers went back to court last week to try to convince a judge that there are grounds for a new trial. That hearing involved multiple witnesses in connection with the defense's new theory that unknown parties had kidnapped Tibbetts at the request of a drug dealer and the two other men had killed her and framed Bahena Rivera. The lawyers said they believe there's an organized sex trafficking ring in central Iowa that might be connected to Mexican drug cartels. The judge said he would make a decision on a new trial soon. There was also word last week that an Iowa judge had ruled that a nurse was justified in quitting her job at a Lee County nursing home due to concerns that staffing levels were unlawful and unsafe for residents. Kristen Pullins had worked for the Montrose Health Center since 2018 as a full-time registered nurse. She resigned in February and applied for jobless benefits, which the home denied. A judge ruled that even though she had voluntarily left her job, she was entitled to jobless benefits. Now, the story about Big 12 football and Iowa State University's possible future. Texas and Oklahoma, founding members of the Big 12 Football Conference, and with two of the most successful and lucrative athletic departments in the nation, took their first steps toward leaving the Big 12 Conference by the year 2025 and joining the SEC. That put the Big 12's continued existence into doubt. And if the Big 12 dissolves, the question is, where does ISU wind up? University President Wendy Winterstein and Athletic Director Jamie Pollard issued a statement about that, saying they're committed to working together to find the way forward. Pollard said, in his words, it's not time to panic. Meanwhile, students in Iowa's public universities will pay more this fall after the Board of Regents unanimously passed tuition increases on Wednesday. The Regents approved a 3.5% hike in tuition for in-state undergraduate students at both Iowa State University and the University of Iowa, and a 1.5% hike for the University of Northern Iowa. Students from out of state will also see hikes. In the world of politics last week, Republican Iowa State Representative John Landon died. The 71-year-old Landon of Ankeny was first elected to the Iowa House in 2012 and was serving his fifth term. Also last week, State Senator Liz Mathis announced she would run for Congress in Iowa's 1st Congressional District. She became the first major Democrat to launch a campaign for the seat now held by Republican incumbent Ashley Hinson. In addition, a rural western Iowa doctor and city council member announced he would run for the U.S. Senate seat now held by Republican incumbent Chuck Grassley. Democrat Glenn Hurst operates a private medical practice in Minden, where he also sits on the city council. Meanwhile, Governor Reynolds named a new commandant for the Iowa Veterans Home, after removing the facility's previous leader without explanation earlier this year. The new commandant is Matthew Peterson, who will lead the nursing facility for Iowa veterans in Marshalltown. Peterson was in the Marines for 2 decades. The Iowa Veterans Home was founded in 1887 and is one of the nation's biggest state-owned nursing homes for veterans, with about 500 residents and 900 employees. And in a related story, word that the man who had been commandant at the veterans home and who had been fired from it, Timon Ogiri, had collected more than $100,000 in excess wages and benefits. A special auditor's report alleged that Ogiri had told the governor's office this year that he knew about the overpayment but did nothing to resolve the issue. Ogiri's lawyer said Ogiri did offer to repay the money. There was also word last week that 4 Iowa counties had declared themselves to be Second Amendment sanctuaries. Madison and Cedar counties became the latest to pass such a resolution, joining Jasper and Hardin counties. The resolution keeps law enforcement from enforcing state or federal laws that might infringe on gun rights. And there was a report that the derecho and drought that have hammered Iowa in the past year had destroyed more than $800 million in corn, soybeans, and pastures. Farmers absorbed nearly one-third of the losses. Crop insurance covered about $560 million of those losses. There was also a report that parent-taught driver's education applications were skyrocketing in Iowa after a bill that expanded that option was enacted in July. The State Department of Transportation has seen a big increase in inquiries about parent-taught options and applications to start driver's ed from home. Also last week, word that after a 5-year boom that resulted in more than 10,000 new apartment units in the Des Moines Metro, no new apartment units opened in the first quarter of this year. Market analysts said developers are taking a natural pause to fill vacancies created by the previously built units. And they say the coronavirus pandemic has something to do with the slowdown. As more and more people stayed home during the pandemic, they launched home improvement projects that resulted in steel and lumber prices skyrocketing and appliances and flooring becoming scarce. There was also word that cities and counties looking for funding for projects in Central Iowa's planned regional water trail system could apply for a share of $5 million provided by MidAmerican Energy. That utility is providing the unrestricted money to the Great Outdoors Foundation, which is leading fundraising to create a connected regional system called the Iowa Confluence Water Trails. Once it's completed, that system will provide places to fish, canoe, and kayak, as well as chances to paddle and surf in whitewater rapids. And then there's the Iowa State Fair. It begins August 12th, and when you go, you'll find that security measures have been increased. Walk-through metal detectors have been added at the main gate fairground entrances. The idea is to get people into the fair as fast as possible. And one more note before I ride off, and it's about the Register's annual Great Bicycle Ride across Iowa, which by now, you know, took place all of last week. So my question is, how do you pronounce it? Ragbri or Ragbray? Well, just about everyone around these parts pronounces it Ragbri, including the Des Moines Register's own staff. But the man who helped found the race decades ago, John Karras, said he thought it was supposed to be pronounced Ragbray. So the bottom line is, however you pronounce it, it's okay. And just to be safe, I'll say it again, both ways. Ragbri, Ragbray. But beware, the only way to pronounce my name is Dennis Hart, and I'll be right back here with Laura Bellin tonight at 7 on KHOI's Capital Week, when we'll talk about politics, Iowa style. And then I'll return to the same virtual seat on Local Talk on Friday morning at 7, when I'll report on what's been making news in Ames. I hope you'll be here for all of it. And I hope you'll go ahead and have a great week.
That's Dave Plain with Radio Sister. Dave Plain is a former resident of Ames of the old jug band fame. Anyways, good to hear Dave. Last Wednesday, Governor Reynolds held a press conference, and Laura Bellin attempted to attend. She's a reporter, a respected Iowa journalist, and author of the blog Bleeding Heartland. She also reports on the political process in Des Moines for KHOI. She appears every Monday night with Dennis Hart, as Dennis just reminded you during his news segment, to review activities in Des Moines. K Capital Week airs on Wednesday at noon as well, or it re-airs, really. And it was in her work for reporting for KHOI that she went to the governor's press conference. However, she was refused entrance. Now, generally at KHOI, we do not cover ourselves as news, but this is somewhat of an exception, as Laura's inability to cover the press conference in person seems to be part of what is turning out to be a bigger story about media in Iowa. So first off, let me just say for the record that Laura is contracted with KHOI to cover the government process in Des Moines. And KHOI is a recognized media entity, and we respectfully have asked for Laura to be admitted to cover news events in Des Moines. And we continue to ask for this. Laura has agreed to join us this morning to explain to us what happened. Laura, thank you for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me, Ursula.
So tell us exactly what happened. This was last Wednesday, right?
Yes, it was Wednesday morning. The governor's office had announced a day or two before that she was planning to have a press conference to discuss the recent Iowa State Patrol mission to Texas. That was the unprecedented decision to deploy state troopers outside the state of Iowa to help with border security measures, and I was very interested in going and attending that press conference. This is really part of a larger story, though, that's been going on for more than 2.5 years, where the government entities in Des Moines have refused to recognize me as a member of the media, even though I publish a substantial amount of original reporting about state government in Iowa.
So tell us exactly what happened when you went there.
Yes, well, so I was wearing my badge, my KHOI press badge, and I had I approached the Iowa Department of Public Safety building where the press conference was to be held about 15 or 20 minutes before, and the governor's press secretary, Pat Garrett, was stationed outside the building, and he was letting other people in, but he told me that I can't go in because I'm not a credentialed member of the media. And I asked him on what basis. He was saying that I had a letter signed by you to confirm that I am reporting for KHOI. And I also had a letter that the Iowa House chief clerk had issued in January that confirmed that due to the coronavirus pandemic, they were not credentialing any media for 2021. This was part of the longer running issue, is that the Iowa House has refused to issue me credentials, and the governor's office has then said that they don't consider me credentialed media because I'm not credentialed in the Iowa House. But what's different this year is that no one was credentialed in the Iowa House, and the governor's office policy does not exist anywhere in writing. This is just something that has been verbally expressed to me. And so I was asking him, you know, I said, no one was credentialed this year, and I'm working for a media organization just like the other people inside are working for media organizations. So he said that he would look at that, but he refused to let me in. And I was a little bit surprised, because although the governor's office has denied me entry to press conferences before, and in fact refused to allow me to participate in any of the governor's telephonic COVID-19 press conferences last year, I was able to attend a press conference she held in late June in her office suite. So I thought perhaps they got some legal advice and determined they can't do that anymore. But when I asked Pat on Wednesday what was the reason that I was allowed to attend the previous press conference, he said, it just happened. You were able to get in, but I'm here now. So that was clearly just an accident that he wasn't stationed outside the office suite. He had, in January 2020, before the pandemic, I had attempted to attend a press conference in the governor's office suite, and he prevented me physically from entering the room.
So who is Pat Garrett exactly? This is the person who's been, in a sense, being the gatekeeper, right? He's been refusing your entrance into these events.
Yes. Well, he's the governor's communications director. And so in that sense, he is the gatekeeper. He's the one who refused to provide me the phone number to call into the COVID-19 press conferences last year, for instance. I wouldn't say that he's probably the decision maker. I would guess that the governor's chief of staff and perhaps the governor herself make decisions about who's going to be allowed into the press conferences. And this is something, again, this has been going on for a long time. So it's clearly not something that Pat Garrett just came up with on his own.
Mm-hmm. Now, on Friday, an email was sent by the Iowa Capital Press Association officers to Pat Garrett objecting to your exclusion from the press conference. And they also issued a statement to AP's Ryan Foley related to this topic and a separate public records issue. And I'll read their statement in a minute. My only complaint was that AP didn't name KHOI. They called us a radio station. But anyway, this is the statement from the Iowa Capitol Press Association. It says, Pat, the Iowa Capitol Press Association objects to your exclusion of one of our members, Laura Bellin, from the governor's news conference on July 28th. Bellin, as a contractor with KHOI Radio, meets the only written media credential qualifications that exist in state government created by the Iowa House for the 2020 legislative session. Another journalist and ICPA member who meets the same criteria, Jack Hunt, was credentialed to cover the legislature in 2020 through a contract with a separate media organization. Further, the governor routinely admits journalists to cover news events outside of the Des Moines area who have never been credentialed by any state entity. We respectfully request that Bellin be admitted to all future news events as a member of the working press. Some representatives of the association would be happy to meet with you to discuss this issue. Iowa Capitol Press Association, Aaron Murphy, president, and then the vice president and the secretary also signed. Who are the Iowa Capitol Press Association?
Well, this is a new organization that the State House reporters formed late last year, just after Thanksgiving, because they wanted a way to speak with one voice about issues related to media access. Initially, actually, their membership criteria technically say that you have to be credentialed in the Iowa legislature to be a member. And so that was problematic for me because, of course, I had been denied credentials by the Iowa House and Senate. I want to just briefly explain why they were referring to Jack Hunt. Jack Hunt runs a newsletter called the Iowa Legislative News Service that's primarily used by people working in the legislature and lobbyists. Very in-depth coverage of what's happening in the legislature. He's been doing this for, I think, more than 30 years. Had always been credentialed up at the legislature since the 1980s. And I began having these problems in 2019 about not being able to get credentialed. And the Iowa House then issued a credentialing, a written policy for the first time. And one of the points was that you have to be employed by a news organization. So a national organization called the Institute for Free Speech, which is a conservative group based in Washington, D.C., they had a nationally known First Amendment lawyer write a memo about my situation, and they sent it to the leaders of the Iowa House and Senate and to the governor's office in April of 2019. And one of the points they raised in that was that Jack Hunt and I, at that time as the Bleeding Heartland publisher and primary author, we were similarly situated, and yet Jack Hunt had always been credentialed and I hadn't been. So the legislative leaders never responded to that legal memo, but all of a sudden in early 2020, for the first time in more than 30 years, Jack Hunt was denied credentials on the basis of that he wasn't employed by a media organization. He was running his own media organization that he owns, the Iowa Legislative News Service. And so he arranged a sort of backdoor situation with an Omaha radio station, and they credentialed him on that basis. So he was, in a sense, he was collateral damage to my situation. But they gave him a workaround with this radio station. So that, in that sense, there's no reason why they shouldn't admit me as a representative of KHOI.
So what are you in a position to give an interpretation of what's going on at this point?
Well, I think it's clear that the governor's office does not have any consistent policy on media access. This idea that you have to be credentialed media seems to be something that's applied only to me. As the statement from the Iowa Capitol Press Association noted, the governor does media events all over the state, and she allows local journalists to cover those events who are not credentialed in the Iowa House. And yet I've been told I can't cover her public events because I'm not credentialed in the Iowa House. Mm-hmm. And I kept a list last year during her COVID-19 press conferences of the many reporters who were allowed to participate and ask questions despite working for news organizations that have never had anyone credentialed in the Iowa House. So the Carroll Times-Herald, Oskaloosa Radio, Raccoon River Valley Radio, Dubuque Radio, that there was an Omaha TV station, and the list goes on. So this idea that suddenly, because I'm not credentialed in the Iowa House, that I can't attend the governor's press conference, it's not a policy. There any media restrictions are supposed to be uniformly applied to similarly situated people, and that this policy is not being uniformly applied.
So when you told Pat Garrett that you were, in fact, there working for a media group for KHOI, what was his response?
He just said he would look at this, but he refused to let me in. He said he would look at the papers I presented to him, because I explained to him that no one was credentialed in the Iowa House. That's the difference between this year and last year, is that last year, many of those other reporters were credentialed to cover the legislature, but this year, the Iowa House issued a letter saying that they weren't credentialing anyone. And I don't really, I don't know how they're going to handle this next year when they don't have the coronavirus pandemic to fall back on, because I expect that by next winter, perhaps there won't be any emergency proclamations in place. But that was the stated reason, in any case, in January, for why they weren't credentialing anyone. But I'm on the same legal footing as every person who was allowed in that room last week. I'm working for a news organization, and no one there had credentials in the Iowa House this year. And again, way back in early 2020, I requested a copy of the governor's office media policy, and I was told this is not a written policy. They don't have a written policy on this, but they rely on the legislature to determine who's credentialed.
Mm-hmm. This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host for the hour, and we've just heard how Laura Bellin was refused access to the governor's news press conference and how the Iowa Capital Press Association weighed in on her exclusion. Laura is the author of the blog Bleeding Heartland and was also attending the press conference within her capacity of reporting for KHOI, and she is really reporting for KHOI. It's not just something that we're doing on paper. She does report weekly here on Capital Week, and we're very pleased to have her reporting for KHOI. So we can't help but take all this a little bit personally, because this is the way that we bring you, the listener, news about what's happening in Des Moines and the workings of our democratic system. And we take that job seriously and would like Laura to be able to be there at the press conference and possibly even ask a question if she could possibly do that. So I wanted to speak with somebody else about this. Various people have weighed in on this by now. And like I said earlier, the AP actually did report on this, not exclusively, but as part of a larger story about media in Iowa. Randy Evans is the executive director of the Iowa Freedom of Information Council, a longstanding and watchdog organization in Iowa. And over the weekend, he also weighed in on what happened with Laura. And so I'd like to play that interview. And Laura, if you would stick around and listen to it, then perhaps you can comment on what Randy says afterwards. So here's Randy Evans, the executive director of the Iowa Freedom of Information Council.
I'm very troubled by what is occurring, but what Laura has encountered in trying to cover the governor's press conferences is not all that much different than what she and other journalists have encountered in their inability to get the governor's office to fill legitimate requests for records that the laws of Iowa say are public and open to anybody trying to gather information about what's going on with state government at a time when, you know, we're facing some of the largest challenges as a state that we have in 100 years.
Before we go into that, could you explain to us what the Iowa Freedom of Information Council is?
The council was formed about 43 years ago by a group of journalists, lawyers, business executives, educators, librarians, who believed that there needed to be a coordinated voice that was speaking on behalf of the public as it relates to access to government meetings and government documents. So we've been around for a long time. Most of our work is spent on trying to educate the citizens of what the law allows, what the law requires, or what the law prohibits. Those educational efforts have been directed at journalists, at ordinary citizens, as well as at government officials who at various times are not as informed about what their obligations are under the open meetings or the public records law.
And what is the open records law that you're referring to? Where is it said that the government has to give access to information?
Chapter 22 of the Code of Iowa is the public records law. Chapter 21 of the Code of Iowa is the public meetings law. and past decisions of the United States courts have made clear that government officials, such as the governor of Iowa, cannot treat some reporters differently than other reporters based on their political views or for what other reason. The whole purpose of the First Amendment, the whole purpose of the open meetings and open records laws is to facilitate the gathering of information that is important for the citizens of Iowa to consume and digest and understand and form their decisions on how effective or ineffective government is in the state. As a political candidate, Governor Reynolds is free to pick and choose who gets to attend campaign events. But when she is in her role as governor of Iowa, when she is holding a press briefing in a state government office building, and when the topic at hand is the decision she made to send state troopers to the southern border in Texas, those are legitimate public government issues that all journalists ought to be able to attend, report on, ask questions of her. It's up to the governor whether she would call on Laura Bellin at a press conference, but there is no basis for denying her the ability to attend a press conference. It's just unconscionable. It is against the spirit of open and transparent government in Iowa. You aren't going to build public confidence, trust, and respect through secrecy, limiting access, or by trying to keep people from engaging. And I think there is clearly liability exposure on the part of the governor's office by picking and choosing who gets to attend press conferences and who doesn't. The only justifiable reason to exclude a certain reporter would be if there were security concerns. And the governor's office has never raised any kind of red flag that they have any security concerns about Laura Bellin. So it's inappropriate for the governor's staff to step in and prevent a credentialed member of the media from attending one of her briefings. Laura is the case at hand, but we would be just as troubled if a Democratic governor were trying to keep reporters from a conservative blog or a conservative news outlet from attending the press conferences. Iowans ought to be concerned about that regardless of what political party they're a member of, because if we allow it to occur now, some people think this is just great that Governor Reynolds is having her way with a perceived liberal reporter, but the situation could be reversed on down the road when the governor is a Democrat and it's a reporter from a more conservative news outlet that's wanting access. We would be troubled by that as an organization, regardless of who the governor is and which political side of the spectrum that journalist is coming from.
You're saying that there's a bigger issue at stake.
Well, I've been in the news business for more than 50 years. For 50 years, I've talked with governors and communications directors for Iowa's governors, Democrats as well as Republicans. And I have never encountered the level of lack of transparency from the governor that we're seeing now. You know, I spent 40 years at the Des Moines Register as an editor and earlier as a reporter, and we would call the governor's office multiple times every week, wanting reaction, wanting comments, wanting to arrange interviews. And without exception, we would get a prompt callback if the person wasn't available when we called. And now I hear reporters coming to me seeking advice on how to get over the roadblock that the governor's staff is throwing up about not only the access to the governor's press conferences, but also the ongoing silence that comes out of the governor's office when journalists are asking for certain public records.
When we here at KHOI called the governor's office, we used to get very prompt responses, but in the last year or two, we have not had any responses when we've called the governor's office. So I have to concur that we've had that experience as well.
Well, I mean, the governor's office clearly has been trying to limit the release of public records to journalists across the state for the past year and a half. There was a lawsuit that was filed just this week over the refusal to release records pertaining to the Test Iowa COVID testing program.
And that's involving the same staff person, right?
It's involving the same staff person, the communications director for the governor, who stepped in and blocked Laura Bellin from entering the press conference.
And with the Test Iowa dispute, who is bringing the lawsuit?
A businessman in Utah interested in the Test Iowa contract that was awarded to a few Utah companies for providing the services that make up Test Iowa. Nobody else was offered the opportunity to compete for the contract. The Test Iowa contract was quite similar to no-bid contracts issued by the state of Nebraska and the state of Tennessee. So a lawyer for the businessman in Utah was trying to get the email communications that were received by the state of Iowa, sent by the state of Iowa to the companies in Utah, the state government officials in Nebraska and Tennessee about their no-bid contracts for COVID testing. You know, communications of that sort are covered under the open records law. According to the lawsuit, the official at the Iowa Department of Public Health who received the open records request said, we'll have those records for you in about 5 days. And that was back in March, and the records still have not been released. And what was occurring in this particular instance is reminiscent of what led to the forced resignation of Polly Carver Kim, the public information officer for many years for the Department of Public Health. And she was forced out because executives at the public health department and officials in the governor's office were troubled that she was too cooperative in releasing records that had been cleared for release by the attorney for the public health department.
And when was that?
March of this year was when the Test Iowa events occurred. The events with Polly Carver Kim occurred in the spring of last year as the COVID pandemic was ramping up. The person who was telling the public health department, telling Polly Carver Kim last year to hold on to those records, it's the same one who was involved in the Test Iowa dispute, the same one who was involved in Laura Bellin's case.
I'm speaking with Randy Evans, who's the executive director of Iowa Freedom of Information Council. We appreciate your responding to what happened to Laura when she was trying to report for KHOI on the governor's press conference. Thank you.
Well, I welcome the opportunity because it's another opportunity to help to inform the citizens of Iowa. And I think one of the most effective ways of encouraging the governor to correct her practices comes with the public spotlight. When the governor isn't making records available, when the governor's staff isn't answering legitimate questions that Joe Ordinary Citizen has, you know, when the people of Iowa communicate with their governor about their frustrations, it becomes more difficult for the governor to ignore that. You know, we're not coming at this with a political agenda. We don't criticize Governor Reynolds because she's a Republican. You know, our criticism comes from the lack of transparency, the lack of openness, the lack of access. You know, it doesn't matter to the Iowa Freedom of Information Council or to myself whether the governor is a Democrat, a Republican, or whatever. The law is written to require government to make available records, to provide access to government meetings so that the citizens of Iowa are better educated, better informed, and better equipped to make decisions about how their government is operating. You know, it doesn't matter to me whether Laura Bellin asks questions and writes articles that sometimes Democrats enjoy seeing and other times that they don't. There is no provision in the free press provisions in the Iowa Constitution or the First Amendment of the United States Constitution that says that an executive like the governor or the president of the United States is allowed to pick and choose who gets to write about them based on their political views. That's just not the way it is operated in the United States going back to the times of the founding fathers. And it shouldn't be the way that we expect or allow our governor to operate today.
Randy Evans is the executive director of Iowa Freedom of Information Council, a nonprofit statewide organization whose mission really is to protect transparency in government. It's a service that anybody can use, right?
It is indeed. The vast majority of records in Iowa are open to public release.
So if a person wanted access to some public records, would your organization be a good place to go to get help?
Yeah, we do that every month. Citizens who come to us for advice after they have oftentimes have been turned back by government employees. Government has told them that certain records cannot be released when that's not an accurate statement. So we routinely talk and coach groups of citizens, individual citizens, about how to craft a request for an open record. Every couple of years, we publish a pocket-sized handbook that includes the complete open records and open meetings statutes. It explains the law in understandable terms and helps both citizens and officials understand the rationale behind the different requirements. And the council, through its 40-some years of history, has not been reluctant to step in and file lawsuits to bring about the access and transparency that we believe is fundamental to Iowa's democracy.
Presumably you have a website where people can find you in getting help.
Right. If they Google Iowa Freedom of Information Council, there's contact information. You know, we're effective, I believe, by helping citizens or journalists get over roadblocks that are put up either intentionally or unintentionally by government.
Okay.
You know, don't hesitate.
Randy Evans, the executive director of Iowa Freedom of Information Council, a nonprofit watchdog group for transparency in government. Thank you so much, Randy.
I thank you for the invitation, and we appreciate the venue that you've provided.
Thank
Have
you so
day.
Much. Bye-bye. And again, that was Randy Evans, executive director of the Iowa Freedom of Information Council. And I'm Ursula Rudenberg. I spoke with him over the weekend. And Laura Bellin is with us. And Laura has been telling us about her recent experience when last Wednesday she attempted to attend the governor's press conference to report for KHOI. Laura reports for KHOI on Capitol Week on Monday nights, and she was refused entrance by Pat Garrett, press director for the governor. Laura, you're still here. You heard what Randy Evans had to say. Your comments about what he said?
Well, first of all, I can highly recommend the Iowa Freedom of Information Council as a resource for people, ifoic.org. They have, in addition to what he mentioned, they have sample letters that people, if they're trying to request records or if they're trying to request access to a meeting, they have sample letters there. So it's really a useful resource. But the Freedom of Information Council has been supportive of me throughout this whole saga for, like I said, more than 2.5 years. Randy wrote a letter on behalf of the council early 2019 urging the legislature and the governor's office to give me access. And then when my access was continued to be denied, they wrote a letter that was signed by about 35 different publishers and news directors and editors from around the state. And so he's just been a very strong voice. Like he said, it's not ideological for him in terms of politics, but it's just a belief in a free access of information. There are a couple of different lawsuits that he mentioned, so I just want, in case people get confused, so Polycarp or Kim's lawsuit is a wrongful termination case. She was the public information officer, communications director for the Iowa Department of Public Health for 12 years. But she was sidelined in the early months of the coronavirus pandemic and eventually forced to resign in July of 2020. And she asserts in her lawsuit that it's because she was, like Randy said, being too cooperative with reporters and fulfilling their records requests. And specifically, she asserts that Pat Garrett, the communications director for the governor, told her to hold and not release documents that had been cleared for release. Now, I will say that even though I was being denied access to the governor's press conferences for a long time, I was able to get public records if I submitted records requests through this Iowa Code Chapter 22. Up until February 2020, I was always able to receive records from the governor's office. And it's really during the coronavirus pandemic that the governor's office just stopped complying with the open records law entirely. So I have 10 records requests outstanding to the governor's office. I know a number of other reporters have their own records outstanding. And so that's been a very frustrating situation. The lawsuit that was just filed last week by this Utah attorney, that relates to the Iowa Department of Public Health and they're being too slow to release emails related to this Test Iowa program. And I do suspect that the lawsuit doesn't name the governor's office. I do suspect that the governor's office is involved in why those records haven't been released yet. But that lawsuit is really just against the Iowa Department of Public Health and its records keeper. So I'm quite anxious to see what they turn up, because reporters have been asking a lot of questions about the Test Iowa program, and we've had trouble getting that information. And this group in Utah has very deep pockets. So if the state tries to charge thousands of dollars for the records, that's something that this group is able to pay that most news organizations don't have that capacity.
So the bigger story here really is the transparency of the executive branch in Iowa towards media, but not just media. This actually isn't a media group. This is another group that wants information, right?
It's a separate group, but it was formed by the then publisher and now board chair of the Salt Lake Tribune. So it has a media angle. The Salt Lake Tribune has been investigating the Test Utah program, which involved the same companies as Test Iowa and Test Nebraska and Test Tennessee. But he created a separate company through which they're making many records requests all over the country. Wherever there were these no-bid contracts for COVID-19 testing, they're looking for evidence of cronyism and also problems, whether, you know, questions about the accuracy of the tests and the accuracy of the data that was made available to the public. So this is a big project, and he set up a separate company so that it wouldn't be done directly with the Salt Lake Tribune, but it is connected indirectly. It's affiliated with the Salt Lake Tribune.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you, Laura. Obviously, this story is to be continued. This is not a resolved issue. Next time the governor has a press conference, are you planning to go?
Yes, I'm planning to attend, and I'll be there with my KHOI press badge. And Pat Garrett told me that he would review the information, so we'll see. But there is no legal basis for him to deny me access to her press conferences for the reasons Randy explained.
Okay, well, thank you. And we appreciate having you as a resource to report for KHOI. And again, just for the record, Laura is contracted by KHOI to report on Des Moines. And so we certainly hope she'll be able to do that to the best of her ability with the cooperation of the executive branch in Des Moines. Thank you, Laura. And I guess to hear Laura speak further about possibly other issues as well than ourselves as the media, tune in tonight at 7 o'clock for Capital Week. And let's hope next time things go better.
I hope to be able to report better news next time.
Absolutely.
After the next governor's conference. But I'll be here with Dennis Hart tonight at 7.
Okay, let's take a quick music break and we'll be right back. Stay with us. This is Local Talk here on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host for the hour, Ursula Rudenberg. Well, it is August. Happy birthday to you if you are Swiss. Switzerland celebrates its Independence Day on August 1st. One of my great pleasures as a child was when we were living in Switzerland was to look at the huge bonfires that people build on top of the mountains on August 1st in Switzerland at night. Anyway, back to Ames, Iowa. Here in Ames, Pub Fiction is returning to Ames this August. After a COVID hiatus, Pub Fiction is the most literary pub crawl in Ames, and possibly in America, or as Bob Anders would say, on the planet. So welcome to Local Talk, Amy Junkie, who is a co-chair of Ames Public Library Friends Foundation. And for those of you who aren't familiar with the annual event, tell us about Pub Fiction.
Sure. Well, thanks for having me on. Pub Fiction is a fundraiser for the Ames Public Library Friends Foundation, and we raise money to help support library programs. The whole idea was to create an event that's a little bit unique. So we partner with Downtown Ames area bars, and they pick a literary theme, and they decorate, they create drink specials, things like that, according to a literary theme. And then our attendees, it's optional, but most of our attendees don costumes that reflect some of their favorite literary characters. And we design a route, get them all together, and it's amazing on the night of Pup Fiction to walk around downtown, because it's kind of transformed into literary characters walking around. So
you do have to admit that it's not only the most literary pub crawl, it's also the most nerdy pub crawl possible, right?
Absolutely. We find joy in nerdiness on that night. So it's really great.
Okay, so the businesses that I understand this year are Angry Irishman, Delaviti, Dog-Eared Books, London Underground, Noir, Time Out, Torrent, and Whiskey River. Did I get that right?
Right, yeah. We've got some great new locations on there. The really fun thing, too, is participants get to visit some of their favorites, and everybody always discovers a new place that they get to try out.
And each business has a theme, right?
Right, yeah. So some of our themes this year, London Underground is doing The Wind in the Willows.
Very nerdy.
Well, it's pretty fun, too. Dog-Eared Books, you know, this is the first year they'll be on their route. They've incorporated their house golden retriever, Lovey, into their theme, so they'll have all things dog books. And
What any other themes that you know of?
Yeah, sure. We have Time Out doing Jurassic Park. Delaviti's got Edgar Allan Poe, or Torrent Brewing's Harry Potter. The Angry Irishman is doing The Little Mermaid, so so all reading levels welcome. And then Noir is doing Raymond Chandler books. So,
yeah, well, The Little Mermaid is actually a tragedy, that story. It's not the Walt Disney version in the books. So anyway, this is an event that has regulars. And one of your regulars is actually KHOI's own Cynthia McClure, who has joined us just for a moment here as well. Cynthia, thank you for joining us here on Local Talk.
Well, I'm here with my husband, and we do this together. And if you pull up Pub Fiction, you look for images, there's a picture of Terry Pratchett's Mr. Death, and Chris, that was me, and Chris was Hercule Poirot. Besides the accents that I couldn't get the baritone down, and you know, he couldn't do the French, so yeah. We looked pretty good. So it was a lot of fun.
Thanks for joining us too, Chris. So this is something that you do as a married couple. This is one of the things that you do?
One of the things,
We did all three years.
Yeah, we did three years. Last time, not last year, but before the pandemic, I was Madame Rose Murta, and Chris, I put him as Death. Actually, I put him as you wore that costume.
Oh, yeah.
But you were a,
like a Grim Reaper.
Yeah, the thing on Harry Potter, the thing that chases him around, those guards from Azkaban. So he was dressed up as that, and I was a character from Harry Potter.
Why do you guys do this? This is a lot of effort. This is more involved than Halloween.
For fun.
For fun. It kind of breaks things up. When my kids were young, I took them to anime conventions, and they did cosplay, so this is not anything other than like adult kind of cosplay, but with alcohol involved.
This is adult play with alcohol.
Yeah.
You know, it's a great way for adults to kind of get together and, you know, patronize the local businesses, some of the businesses that we don't really get to very often, but it's a great excuse to find our way into these businesses and patronize them, and also to meet new people and socialize.
And also to support the public library, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So Amy, give us the specifics on this. And just one question, too. If you want to participate in this, do you have to dress up according to the theme in one of the bars, or can you create your own theme?
So you don't even have to dress up, but no, you are not limited to any theme, so whatever you like. And the event's coming up here on Thursday, August 12th. Check-in is 5:30 to 6 at the library, and if you come between 5:30 and 6, you can buy a ticket the day of, or you can buy tickets at the library welcome desk or online. We have a bit.ly address of pubfiction2021. And I go ahead to say I accidentally left out Whiskey River there. Whiskey River is doing Westerns, or basically Louis L'Amour books too. So sorry about that.
And information about this can be found on the public library website, right?
Yeah, and then Ames Public Library Friends Foundation, there's a link from there as well. And if I could thank our sponsors this year, because it's really more important than ever, because we usually ask the partner bars for a fee, and we didn't do that this year considering the economy. We have Ripke Design, Green Hills Retirement Community, Ames Lincoln Ford, Ames Chamber of Commerce, and the Iowa State University Research Park. We really, really especially appreciate it this year.
Yeah, thank you for supporting the public library, all of those sponsors. Okay, so again, give us the date again, Amy.
Yeah, August 12th. Check-in starts 5:30, 6:00. You come and we'll give you a route. We'd love to see you there. It's really a blast.
Okay, and that's Amy Junkie. She's co-chair of the Ames Public Library Friends Foundation, and the event is the pub crawl that is super geeky, called Pub Fiction. And Cynthia and Chris, real quick, what are you going to be this year? Who are you this year?
We're going as like a Father Brown. He's going to dress up as the priest Father Brown from those mysteries. And I'm going to go as his sidekick with some strawberry scones.
Yes, Mrs. McCarthy.
Wow. So, as you can see, this is here. This is very esoteric. So,
yeah. So if you watch Iowa Public Television, Father Brown's one of the mystery series that shows up. So,
okay,
yeah, it's fun.
So this is your chance to show your literary chops. And for more information, we'll put information on our website, khoifm.org, but you can also find it at the Ames Public Library website. Thank you, Amy, and thank you for Chris to Chris and Cynthia for joining us. And this has been Local Talk. I've been your host, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for listening. Stay tuned tonight for Capital Week at 7 p.m. And remember that you are the reason why KHOI exists. You make us meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.